As the country considers reopening schools, a policy brief released by the Department of Economics at Stellenbosch University argues that by allowing the youngest children to go back to school first, teachers and parents will be at a lower risk. This policy brief was authored by Dr. Nick Spaulding. Dr. Nick Spall, in fact, who is the education economist at Stellenbosch University, and he joins us now on the line. Dr. Spall, good afternoon. Good evening to you. Thank you so much for your time. You argue in this brief that grade 1, 2, and 3 learners should be allowed to return to school first. Why do you believe that the youngest people don't pose much risk to the teachers and parents?
Hi, thanks for having me. So there's been a lot of research that's been done from countries that have had a lot of COVID infections, looking at who gets infected, how often, and what is the source of the infection. And one of the consistent findings that's coming out of these countries, and this includes China, Japan, America, Germany, the Netherlands, Iceland, Italy, Switzerland, I mean, a number of different countries, is that children are much less likely to catch COVID-19 compared to adults, and they're also less likely to transmit it to adults, and they almost never die of COVID-19. Mm. So I think there's now quite a strong consensus that children are much less likely to get the virus and transmit it, which is the reason why I argued in this paper that if we're going to be going back to school, which I think is the right decision, we should be starting with the youngest because they are at least risk of infecting their teachers and their parents. But I do also agree with the minister that the matrics do need to go back first because they have the... if we don't do that, it's going to mess up the schooling system for next year.
But there would also need to be a close monitoring infection rate, maybe to look at, I suppose, a random sample of teachers and their families of grade R children, for instance, just to see if this is really the case.
Yes. So that is something that we suggest in the policy brief, is that as they incrementally introduce new grades or additional grades for children to come back to school, they could take a sample of schools and test the parents and the teachers of those kids and use that as an indication of whether or not the infections have increased for that group compared to another group where the kids have not gone back to school. Mm. In countries like Denmark and Sweden where kids have gone back to school, they haven't seen a spike in infections amongst teachers and parents. So that's also quite encouraging.
Mm. And I suppose allowing these young children back to school would also help in that they are the least able to follow self-directed learning at home. So they need a lot of intervention. And that becomes a burden, if you will, on the parents that would in some instances be required to report for work.
Most definitely. So I think if schools do not reopen, parents cannot go back to work. It's pretty plain and simple. If you've got children that are 5 and 6 years old that would normally be going to school, but now you have to take care of them because the schools are closed, you won't be able to return to work. So I think everyone in South Africa is now saying, if the vaccine is only going to be arriving in next year or 2 years, or we don't actually know, we can't keep our country locked down for a year. Mm. So we have to figure out what is the new normal, where schooling operates with social distancing, where people can go back to work and try and do it in a safe way, because just locking down the entire country, if we keep this up for 6 months, there won't be a country to come back to.
Mm. And I see that in your paper, Dr. Spall, you also argue that, you know, children's well-being increases when they are at school. Can you please elaborate on that?
Sure. So there are a number of children that depend on schooling and their families depend on them going to school to support their well-being. So a really good example of this is the school nutrition program. So every single day that children go to school in South Africa, 9 million kids receive a free school meal as is part of the National School Nutrition Program, the NSNP. So as long as schools are closed, kids are not getting those meals. It also means that while schools are closed and the economy is closed, parents are not earning an income to support their families. I think we heard from some of your listeners earlier of the impact on their incomes. That also has an impact on their kids. If they can't provide for their families and buy food, that has a very big implication for those kids' lives, even beyond COVID. So there was another study that was published showing that particularly for workers in the informal sector, they estimated that an additional 4 million South Africans have moved into extreme poverty as a result of the lockdown. So they're living on less than 10 rand per person per day, and that has very strong knock-on effects into kids and kids' lives.
And I suppose we also don't have evidence of what's happening during the lockdown and whether that learning is continuing. What do we know about that? In fact, Dr. Spall, whether this lockdown that's been continued, is there data perhaps that helps us understand what maybe happens during the holidays, even when it comes to maybe learning losses perhaps?
Yes. So, I mean, there's been quite a lot of talk of children learning from home and there being these programs of kids learning from TV and learning using the internet. But I think we need to be realistic that for the majority of children, that's not an option. So the General Household Survey of 2018 showed that only 20% of South African households have a computer in them and only 10% of households have an internet connection to the house. So it's impossible for children to be doing meaningful learning, meaningful curricular learning during lockdown. So there are a lot of countries that show the learning losses that happened over the summer holiday. And I think that's what we're going to see here as a result of the lockdown. We're going to see inequalities in learning increasing because the rich schools that are charging fees and are managing to conduct classes online, which is also true for university students, where some university students and some universities are able to offer that, whereas for most it's not. So I think in short, we can say that during the lockdown, for at least 80% of learners, all curricular learning has stopped.
Thank you so much. That's so insightful. Dr. Nick Spall is the education economist at Stellenbosch University.